Again, and welcome to I've Got a Beatles Podcast with Dave and Chris, and we're amped up for this one today. This is so exciting because we've been waiting all year to get to this review. It's an anniversary of a, I guess you'd say, forgotten Paul McCartney album. It's the 20th anniversary of his 1993 release Off the Ground, which was you just heard the title track from it. And it does seem to be forgotten in the McCartney catalog, don't you think?
Yeah, I was actually going to say, how many people do you think, percentage-wise, even of people who are, like, Beatle fans, know of this album, own it, listen to it on a regular basis? Probably very, very small percentage compared to a lot of the other things we talked about. But, surprisingly, as we were looking at information about the sales of it, it did relatively well. It got in the U.S. sold over, you know, certain amount of, I think it was a gold record or something in the U.S. So
yeah,
so charted highly. So.
It did. And so today we're going to go through the tunes on the album as well as give it a little context and tell you who's on the album, when it was made, what happened right before and after, that sort of thing. So we'll go back in the time machine, and we were just talking a little bit before the show. I think you and I were both just starting college, right? When this came out, we were at Illinois.
This would have been my freshman year in college.
Right, right.
And I was living in at my dad's house on the farm near Villa Grove, Illinois, and driving up to the U of I every day, so commuting to college, which was not the best experience I could have chosen for my college years. But but one thing it did do is give me a lot of in-car listen to stuff time.
Yeah, so you got some good cassettes.
Exactly. Yeah. So if I bought, say, an Off the Ground when it came out, as I probably did, I would have listened to it quite a bit driving back and forth.
And I think it's very much, at least for me, and I know for you now, and probably all of our listeners too. You probably feel the same way. Music has a certain way of bringing you back to a particular place and time of where you were or what you were doing. And I vividly remember this being part of early college days. And I was so excited when you would get a new Beatles solo release. Because at that time you still had, well, George was releasing things and Paul was coming out with new things. And, well, Ringo, I guess, too. But, the new McCartney album, pretty exciting. And he'd just been on tour, right? This was the 89-90 tour, Flowers in the Dirt, really good stuff. Mm-hmm.
And Flowers in the Dirt, we both really, really liked that album.
Yes, definitely.
And it seemed like, oh, this was going to be a follow-up to that album and be pretty good, mm-hmm. I think was my expectation of it at the time. If we look at something in Paul's catalog and we're like, this is mostly a dud. I'm not saying I don't like Paul McCartney because I wouldn't be doing a Beatles podcast if I didn't like Paul McCartney.
Of course.
And so I want to lay that groundwork.
Oh yeah, no, I appreciate
so that we could get off the ground.
Oh, all right.
Pretty bad.
So on this album, well, the intention behind it was it's. Paul has these crazy ideas. This was just right after the Liverpool Oratorio, and he was going back into the rock music world.
Get to that review?
Yeah, I think we missed that one, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh yeah, we already missed it.
Came and went. Sorry. Well, one of these. We'll sometime when we're really hurting for a topic, we'll pull out McCartney classical music. That would be a a good one. But anyway, Paul's idea for this one was he liked the band that he was playing with at the time, which was on tour. And so we should tell you who was in the band that's also on this album, and including two of your favorite all-time McCartney sidemen, I think.
Well, yeah.
Definitely one who's still currently a sideman, actually.
Yeah, nobody's better. No better sideman.
But I know you were a big Hamish Stewart fan.
Oh, yes, Hamish Stewart. If you ever saw Paul McCartney in the 90s era on TV or something, and you were like, who's that goofy-faced looking dude?
With the white hair.
With the white hair. Hamish.
Yep, Stewart. Hamish Stewart plays bass and guitar on this album. You have, of course, Linda McCartney, but she was still singing along and also playing other things on the album. Robbie McIntosh was the guitar player. Blair Cunningham was the drummer. And, of course, current sideman and keyboard wizard Wix Wickens was still there.
I did you proud at the McCartney concert. I shouted at the top of my lungs, Wix, at least.
Did he hear you?
Wix!
Nice.
Anytime he showed up on the big screen, I was like, Wix!
Well, Wix Wickens, here he was. So that's who's on the album. And the idea was Paul wanted to, it's like the same thing, same idea for Get Back. We want to just record the album in the studio with no overdubs, just do everything live, one of those things. And there are actually a couple songs on here that are live, one take. But funny, the one you just heard, the opening song, Off the Ground, is anything but. It's a real studio production, I would say. So he brought in another producer, Julian Mendelson, I think his name is, to help with some of the production. That's pretty much the origin of this album. And one review I saw said they thought it was Flowers in the Dirt Part 2, which you kind of alluded to.
Sounds a lot more like Flowers in the Dirt Junior.
Ah, okay.
To me.
Good distinction.
And additionally, the technology of the time had changed to more of a, like, what they thought were kind of innovations in production and in guitar sounds and in actually guitars. Because one of these songs, it's clearly they're playing an Ovation guitar. which was very popular at the time in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. But all of us who play guitars and like guitars and know guitars hate Ovation guitars.
Oh, they're awful. So tinny.
It sounds so tinny and so awful. So there were some things that, you know, even if they think they're being, like, you know, hands off production wise, they're not.
They're really, not. No.
You know? So I think that really stands out to me. And when I listen to this whole album, I'm like, oh, where's a clean, you know? And then one of these bonus tracks is this little 30-second like noodling on a guitar kind of thing, but it's one of the best guitar sounds on the whole in the whole time of the production of this, because it's just like nothing but the guitar. You know, and I'm like, oh, this is nice for a change.
Yeah, I know. Think about it, too. What was going on in music in the early 90s at this point? This is right when Pearl Jam and Nirvana and grunge music was really going. So this does sound a little overproduced, or sounds a little plasticky, mechanical sounding compared to those guys who were very raw and straight from the amp into the... And there's no processing or anything. So
yeah, it sounds a little out of touch in that way of, like, in 1993, like, you know, is the height of, I mean, we also this year just got a re-release of the Nirvana's second album in a box set, and it realizing that was 20 years ago and some things like that. So it's like wasn't just new, hot off the presses that these bands were popping up. It was like, no, everybody's going to more natural guitar sounds and, like, grungy type stuff. And Paul's like, nope, I'm going the other direction.
And so you really hear that in the first song, I think, which I have to say, I like the song Off the Ground, the title track. I think it's catchy. It has a good chorus, good background vocals, And it's got a nice, I mean, the writing of it is a good song, I think. It's just marred a little bit by the production values.
Yeah, sort of like a crunchy guitar sound, but so crunchy that's telling me it went through like a pedal.
Yeah,
like
lots of processing.
Electronic pedal process.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I could always do without claps and sighs and my
soulless. A lot of claps, yeah.
A lot of claps and a lot of
yeah, a lot of That's true. That was, yeah.
But I agree, off the ground, that song isn't too bad. It's kind of, you know, maybe if I heard it today at one of his concerts, I'd be like, oh, this is a nice change of pace and
yeah,
a decent song. It's an okay song. It's not, you know, definitely one of the better songs in the album. Good way to start the album.
Followed up by a song called Looking for Changes, which there are a couple songs on this album where Paul really shows his activist or political animal rights side, and this is one of them.
All right, it's yeah. Looking for Changes. Dave, preachiest song of all time?
It is a little bit preachy. It's about a cat. Well, I think it hits you right off the bat with I saw a cat with a machine in its brain and going off on that.
I regaled someone at a party last night telling him those lyrics from that song.
Yeah.
He's like, what? He's just like, why would those be lyrics to a song?
It's very much the animal rights thing that he and Linda were definitely involved in at the time. And I don't know. Maybe it sounds a little odd because Paul's not very political. His songs aren't very political, most of them. And so this really seems strident almost in the way it comes off.
Yeah, it sort of... Sure, like jerks you, like what?
Yeah,
like there's another song we'll talk about later, one of the B-sides, that really does something.
Yeah,
like what?
It's very jarring. Yeah,
like Paul. it seemed like there's a little bit of. See, I like a little bit of anger in Paul.
Yeah, he's definitely got some venting going on,
but. It comes off because of, maybe it's because of the production and all of that. It comes off real weak, kind of preachy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, animal rights. You know, I know you're into animal rights. We all love that he's into animal rights. Meat Free Mondays and all this.
Meat Free Mondays, yeah.
All this kind of stuff. Yeah. But, and I can't pass this one up without mentioning the sort of monkey sound.
Oh yeah, that's really that's terrible. That's terrible.
So pretty bad. So
yeah, the monkey sound.
Looking for changes.
But again, once again, he really just can't write a bad tune very often. It's still a catchy song, even if the lyrics fall a little flat. It still is catchy. As is the next song, which was a. Well, it was not a hit over in the U.S. at all, but it was a major hit in Europe for some reason, especially the Germans. The Germans really liked the next song, which was the first single, Hope of Deliverance.
I will always be hoping, hoping. You will always be holding, holding my heart in your hand. I will understand someday, one day. You will understand always, always from now until then. When it will be right, I don't know. What it will be like, I don't know. We live in hope of deliverance from the darkness that surrounds us. Hope of deliverance. Hope of deliverance. Hope of deliverance.
Well, it's pretty, like, decent song. It's pretty... Like, the pacing of it's great.
Yeah.
I like it's a sort of blistering pace. Lively. Very, very lively. It's like the liveliest song of the album. When I did, obviously have heard live versions of this on some of the other, you know, things, and it's pretty good. It's not bad. And I think there's this song and another song later in the album that I think are, like, perfect songs to hear maybe if they come on at a shopping mall or something.
You're like walking around the grocery store or something.
It's like shopping mall rock.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is a great song to hear. Like kind of a happy, like hopeful.
Jaunty. Yeah, it is.
Jaunty kind of like happy music, you know?
Yeah.
That I very much like towards the end of the song is there's a little bit of whoop-a-doo-doo-doo-doos in the background. Yeah. And I love the very end. There's a
yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. The way it ends.
Kind of thing. That's cool. Yeah. What I don't like is sort of the overproduced bossa nova kind of thing happening. Once again, it's like, can we make this? Can we strip away some of this production stuff?
How much of it though is just the times? I guess do we have to just chalk it up to the fact that's what people were doing or? That's what Paul did at the time, or that's how he knew. I don't know. That Julian Mendelssohn, I should have looked him up, but I think he was working with some pop acts at the time. So it would make sense that he was influenced by that. But you're right. It does. Now it seems very overproduced or overdone. It's dated in that way.
You know, when you talk about that, too, it makes me think, with a very few exceptions, that he usually picks a producer or a group of producers in this latest set that have more pop success than, say, rock and roll success, other than when he got the guy from Radiohead to produce that one album.
Yeah.
That was, to me, I was like, that's a good choice. Go that direction. The results weren't that great, but maybe he always favors, let's get the pop producer.
Yeah.
Because I want top 40 pop hits. I would like him to make an album that's like more of a full artistic kind of piece, you know?
Right. And I think that's a good point that ties in well with Hope of Deliverance, because that is... It does have a bit of a poppy sheen to it overall, which it's a nice song. It's very catchy and very upbeat and fun, but it is a little, that production again just kind of detracts a little bit. But I think we both would give it probably a thumbs up overall for the song.
Yeah, that's probably the one song so far that I'm like, is the most okay on this, not so okay album. The next song, I would not say that of. It's called Mistress and Maid, and I got about 4 seconds into it, and I was like, listening to it while I'm doing something else, it starts playing about 4 seconds into it, and I was like, filler. It's like instant filler. It's a very forgettable song. Yeah. It sort of had a potential kind of melody, and it just seems like it got off the rails somewhere in the writing of it, you know?
Yeah, it drags in a little bit. Yeah, this was a song on Flowers in the Dirt. Paul decided to collaborate on a couple of tracks with Elvis Costello, and they were pretty good tunes on that album, but they tried to repeat the magic here on this album, and this is one of two songs on the album that are co-written with Elvis Costello, and this one just doesn't do it. It's a little pompous, a little bit overwrought for me.
Yeah, and it's sort of a mess, like musically. When I you know, some of these things I say overproduced, and really I'm just talking about one or two things in it. That this thing is just like chock full of like, it's kind of like, oh, where's the, you know.
There's like five ideas.
Where's the blackbird in you still, pal?
Yeah.
like let's see. Yeah. So many things happening. It's
too many
too
ideas.
Much.
Yeah. So we're not gonna play that for you, but we will talk about the next song, which is called I Owe It All to You. Another song probably for Linda, I'm guessing.
Now, we'll play this from the beginning so we can talk about something about it, but so I can make fun of one little bit of it. But anyway, here we go. Songs we talk about on this album that have some crazy vocals, some crazy lyrics.
The I'm quoting from a book here by Vincent Benitez called The Words and Music of Paul McCartney, and on this song he says, "The songs juxtapose verses that have McCartney recounting exotic images such as the interior of Egyptian temples, the sea songs of seabirds, glass cathedrals, golden canyons, and glistening lakes of holy water shining like diamonds in the light." Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. It's a lot of images.
It's just out of nowhere. It's just like relating to nothing.
Yeah.
I was in Egyptian cathedral, you know, just, ugh.
But we will say, when we were listening to it.
Oh, well, let's not get past here.
Okay.
That worthless sort of like prologue.
Yes.
Like there's 30 seconds of this just like, ooh, we're about to get to it. Here we go. And the guitar thing.
Yeah.
But this does sound a little better as far as like the production goes. A. B, it has probably the most vocal intrigue of any. Like this is where he's sounding very good. Paul's sounding very Paul.
Yeah.
And singing very well.
Yes. Yeah, very true. As you said, it actually sounds like good vocals and actually like a real guitar at the beginning, too. I don't think there's much on it. It's actually like a real guitar. So,
yeah.
It sounds
so if you can get past the lyrics that make zero sense to me, and if you can get past the awful solo.
Yeah.
Just a miserable, like, poor guitar. It's like...
Yeah, not very inspired there at all.
Oh! There's a... He sings a bridge. And then the second time they come around to the bridge, it's just... Ding, ding, ding. Egyptian cathedral.
Oh, that's right.
Golden canyons.
Yeah.
It's like you forgot to sing the bridge, buddy. Like you said, Paul, that last take. When you get to that second bridge, you're supposed to sing it. I'm supposed to just like do the backup vocals. We got other guests to do the backup.
Yeah, it's like that song. When they said, don't know much about history, and in the middle they're just going, science book, French I took. That's Sam Cooke's exactly. Song. It's the same kind of thing there. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Well, he wanted you to know that you about Egyptian temples again, golden canyons, and seabirds' song of joys, and stuff like that, so... I don't know. He's trying.
I very mixed feelings about this. And all of this album, like the rest of this album, I mean, especially the next one we get to, they have this thing of like, they're actually pretty good in a way.
Yeah.
But in another way, they're so off and so like, what? Like, it's kind of like, what is in your head right now?
I know.
What is making you do this?
I don't know.
So,
and that feeling really, it definitely carries through this album, especially this next track, which is a single. He seemed to like this song a lot because he played it a lot.
Oh, yeah, he played it so much.
A lot.
It was like, I know this is the one.
This is the one.
This is the one.
And we're talking about... Biker Like an Icon.
There was a girl who loved a biker. She used to follow him across America, but the biker didn't like her. She didn't care, she still persisted. Though her brother said she was twisted, and the family said they wouldn't miss her anyway. She loved the biker like an icon, gazing at his picture every day. She loved the biker like an icon, slowly watching precious water drip away. She did her best to fix a meeting.
Well, we can start by saying it was a first take, and so it was done live, and Paul later said in an interview I saw or read about this, he said, I didn't think it was a good idea to put any overdubs or anything on it to ruin the perfect vibe.
Okay, great. Great. Isn't that what you said you were going to do the whole album? Then
you didn't.
Why'd you do it all over the rest of the album and then claim that you didn't?
Right.
You know? We're basically repeating the jacket of Let It Be.
Yeah. Where it says, back like, to basics.
Here they are in their purest form. And then half of the stuff has the most strings and stuff.
Orchestra.
All over it. You know? So I like that part of it. I like the energy of like, oh, the band sounds good.
Yeah, yeah.
But
the lyrics. Really.
Hearing the phrase biker like an icon over and over and over.
Yeah.
Apparently, this is from Wikipedia, so take it with a grain of salt. commenting on the song, Paul McCartney stated that the line biker like an icon came from a conversation about photo cameras with his wife Linda McCartney. The phrase I like Leica became I like a Nikon. And the lyrics were built around that line with the story of a girl loving a biker like an icon.
Inspiration hits you in the strangest places sometimes.
What? Why write a song? like a chit chat you're having with your girlfriend. Yeah. An inside joke with your girl. I would never write that. I got a lot of inside jokes with my girlfriend, but I'm not going to write songs about them. I'll tell you that.
No.
Because it only makes sense to be with my girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
If you pass it on to the world, everybody's like, ugh, what is this?
Yeah, this one just doesn't. The lyrics really mar it, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. How come it was better when Paul McCartney, or Paul Simon said, I like a Nikon camera? That sounded okay there in Kodachrome. Yeah. It worked there for some reason, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's the other part about this song, lyrically. I mean, what is the point? Like, yeah. What I don't get is if he's saying... It's good that she ran away with this biker she liked, she lived for the moment, or if it's like, it's sort of like almost presented as if it's like, oh, this, we're telling a tale.
Yeah,
like,
cautionary tale.
Cautionary tale of girls can fall in love and run away with people. It's just, I don't get it. It's it's like a extraordinarily poor man, she's leaving home.
Good comparison. I like that.
Thank you.
Wow.
I do like the ending, though.
Yeah.
It's just,
well, when it goes a little faster.
A few seconds, it goes, biker,
Yeah. Musically good, always. Yeah. So you go from a song about a biker like an icon into a song that Paul also played live quite a bit during that next tour, called Peace in the Neighborhood. And he actually even replayed it in recent year, the past year or two. He brought that one back for some reason.
Yeah. Here, let's hear a little Peace in the Neighborhood.
I think the sentiments are good. It's another song talking about how people, if they could just get along and help each other out, the world would be a much better place. But unfortunately, things aren't like that. And so it's maybe a recalling of the 60s, kind of the peace and love. I mean, the song is called Peace in the Neighborhood, but a time when there was hope and people coming together. But I have more problems with it musically, I think, than lyrically, but just...
Yeah, it's kind of all... It's very confused,
yeah.
Particularly the bridge. Like, the whole chord progression in the bridge is like where are we going with this? It's sort of like meandering.
Yeah,
and
that's the problem. It goes on for about a minute too long, I think.
This song's called 5:06.
Yeah, a little...
Which is a little long. It loses... I think I put, why 5 minutes, last 2 minutes worthless?
Yeah, exactly.
Because the last 2 minutes, too, are just, there's not even any more song.
No, it's there's vamping, like jamming. Yeah.
Vamping around for no reason.
Yeah.
This was the one I wrote, if this came up on in a department store, you'd be kind of like, oh, this is good.
Yeah. It's a perfect
setting for this. It's kind of like everybody's fine, everybody's happiness.
Another one? You know, yeah, another good song.
Kind of like if you hear Walking on Sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
Like that, it's kind of like fits in that mold of like, oh, everything's good.
Yeah.
You know, it's all good. It's all kind good. Of like, you know.
Yeah.
Don't worry, be happy, those type of songs. So.
Yeah, I think his voice, he also tries about four different types of styles of singing on this one, too. He tries the very serious, earnest style, and then he's the rocker, and then he's straining his voice really high, and then it's sort of low. I don't know. It's just all over the map musically.
Yeah. I will say, though, it's kind of lame. It's definitely a lame song. Let's
more filler. Yeah, definitely filler.
It's not mince words. It's lame. This is a song they would point to, and they're like, Paul McCartney. Yeah, it's lame.
That's true.
He's not cool.
Yeah.
But despite that, I kind of like the song. It's got a certain energy to it,
yeah,
a certain positivity.
Mm-hmm.
If it comes on, you know, though I might go to the restroom if it came on in a concert, I would not.
And you'd come back and it would still be playing.
Hate it. Yeah. It's too long. Yeah. But overall, I'm like, I'm a little on the fence with that one. I feel like if it was 2 minutes shorter, I'd be like, it's pretty good. Pretty decent little lame, but pretty decent.
Okay, so, we'll go with that. How's that compared to the next song here?
The next song. I believe the next song is probably one of the most talked about between me and you.
Yeah.
Because it would be one of the ones that people would point at being most quintessentially head-scratchingly odd, bad Paul in quotations,
yes. Yeah.
Songs. So let's hear a little bit of Golden Earth Girl.
Again, it's very good musically, as McCartney songs tend to be. I'll quote again from the Benitez book on this particular song. He says here, "Despite the song's sophisticated music, its stylish melody, harmonic support of interest, blah, 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 the hippie lyrics seem out of place in 1993, a throwback to an earlier time. For example, in its first verse, the song speaks about a golden earth girl and female animal that serenades the wind. She rests in a mossy nest in the evening, perceiving moonlight in the air.
Sensing moonlight in the air. Yeah. But we cannot get,
it's
fish in a sunbeam.
Yeah.
In eggshell seas.
Which
fish. Yeah, which is a little play on words.
Yeah.
But who cares? Like, like a play on words. Like, oh, you meant NHL season? Who cares? Like, what is that? Who fish in a submarine? Great. I honestly asked myself, is he singing about a lady frog? Is this song about a lady frog? Because it's like in a mossy nest. Can't really tell if there's moonlight in the air just by looking. Oh, look, there's moonlight.
And sees in the pool her own reflection.
Yeah. I think this it's is about a song frog. About a lady frog.
It could be.
The Golden Earth Girl is a lady frog.
Yep. Eggshell finish.
It's insane. It's an insane song.
It's too bad. Maybe it was an old acid trip or something. I don't know.
There's a decent oboe solo. Although musically, they're like, yeah, musically it's pretty sophisticated and stuff. And it is. But it plays a little junior high dancey to me. You know, like when I hear it, it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
It's, you know, one of the all-time lamest, weirdest, bad. It's the most fun to talk about.
It is. Like,
such
weird,
you know,
song.
And then,
very weird.
And then this song kind of just rolls right into the lovers that never were, even though it's only 3 minutes 43 seconds long. The lovers that never were is about a minute too long. It puts me almost immediately to sleep. It's a very listless.
That's another Elvis Costello McCartney composition. That definitely feels like a throwaway from Flowers in the Dirt.
Yeah.
I just had an extra one. I guess I like maybe three or four songs that Elvis Costello wrote. I'm not a big fan of his, but that really smacks a little too much of his stuff, I think, to me.
Maybe yeah.
What I don't like about his music, maybe.
And it's all over the place.
Another one of those.
What you're talking about his vocals being all over the map.
Yeah.
You know, and not really being, like, if you said something positive about Golden Earth Girl, it's like got a good melody. It's like a sensible melody. It flows through, you know, a musical scheme of chord changes that make appropriate sense.
Yep.
Lovers That Never Were is just like, where are you going with this? We're almost like into a second, like, you know, song or something.
Yeah, which is why it's so funny where it appears on the album, because what follows it is like the complete opposite kind of tune.
Yeah.
You have this three chord rocker bluesy type song, Get Out of My Way. I had to call it a rocker, but it was.
Yep. Okay, let's hear how much the rocker Get Out of My Way rocks.
Got some good horn licks that come in at the end. I sort of like the horn.
Yes.
That's maybe the highlight. Is that about it or no? Just generic.
Don't even get me started on this thing.
Generic.
I said, this is what scares me when Paul says in interviews about an upcoming album that, I recorded a bunch of rockers. This This is what I assume is going to happen.
Yeah.
Because this song is wimpy. in every place where it should be bold and nasty.
Yeah.
It's the song is titled Get Out of My Way.
Yeah.
And if someone came up to me singing this, I'd be like, eh, I'm going to stay in your way, all right, pal? You wuss. You know? And it's like, it should be, and the message of the lyrics of the song are, get out of my way because I'm going to meet my gal that I love.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, what? Like, what's the point of this then?
Yeah.
Like, watch out, I gotta get to my gal. Okay. He's running. It's almost like it's a happy song.
It's happy, yeah.
Called Get Out of My Way. It's like, eh, I don't.
Yeah.
This is literally, it sounds like before they started rocking, this group of people, someone popped in and said, like, guys, just so you know, Grandpa's sleeping. So if we can keep the amps down a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's one other thing that I really, really, really don't like about this song is there's this dumb pause near the end.
Oh, yeah.
Because da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you think the song's over. Doodle-dee-doo. Yeah, right. That's our song.
The pause. I forgot that. Yeah. good observation. Yeah, that I agree with that one, with all your points on that. This one just sounds to me like a throwaway, like a real filler. Just, you know, nothing. Got to fill 3 minutes on the album here to pad it a little bit. So not much happening. And also maybe because you'd had a bunch of slow songs in a row, and you have a slow one next to it, right after, actually two more that follow it. It's like someone said, "Hey, Paul, you got to write a fast one." So this is what he did, and it's just throwaway song.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound like, you know, they probably recorded this once and then added all the extra stuff to it.
Yeah.
But I don't like it. It's, no. It's one of my least favorite.
Yeah, definite skipper.
Of all time.
Oh, all time, wow.
Yeah, it goes way in. I'd rather hear Golden Earth Girl again than this. And Golden Earth Girl's idiotic.
How about the next one, Wine Dark Open Sea?
Oh. Baby, I can't wait to talk about this one. Here we go. Here it is.
Open up your heart if you wanna set me free. Full of love, your love, sailing on a wind dark open sea. Sailing on a wind dark open sea. Lighten up my heart, leave it to the evening breeze. Give me love, your love, sailing on a wind dark open sea. Sailing
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Wine Dark Open Sea, again, using this idea of an image for a song like Golden Earth Girl. Here you have sailing on a wine dark open sea. And that's supposed to be where we go when we set me free or something like that. You're full of love. I don't know.
It sounds like you're really trying to explain. Like,
I'm trying.
Your crazy friend meant when he said, like your crazy friend said something nuts and left the room, yeah. And then everybody's like offended or something.
What did he just
say? You're like, listen, listen, it's this. It's what he's trying to say is
right. He's sailing on a wine dark open sea is what he's doing. So
stupid lyrics again, complete nonsense. Additionally, very right at the beginning, and I didn't even realize until we were like a few seconds ago. He says, "Open up your heart." If you want to sail with me, I think that's the
set
first.
Set me free.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he's demanding to his lover, first of all, your heart's pretty closed, all right? You better open up your heart, mm-hmm. all right? And you have to save me, all right?
Yeah.
Set me free, and then we can sail.
I'm dark open like, sea.
Yeah. This song about in the middle of it, it's another way too 5:27.
Needs some editing.
And at that pace, we were listening to that ad. It's like, ugh. But he starts letting out these sighs, yeah. And at the time I was listening to it, I was like, sounds like he's exasperated from recording this album. Like he's so beat.
Just
like,
that song.
I also this is the one with that guitar sound that sounds like so Ovation guitar
yeah,
to me.
Yeah,
like so plasticky.
Yeah. It's another one that it's too long, too meandering. I do like the bridge. The bridge was very catchy.
I agree.
But I think it drags on so long, and at the end he just sounds very preachy or whiny. And he keeps sailing on a wind dark open sea. This keeps going and going, yes. Right?
I was going to mention the high strained, like, why he goes to this. He goes to this, and it really sounds, I almost want to find the clip.
It sounds so strained at the end. It doesn't sound like he really wants to be with her, actually. He's kind of mad at her or something. He's like growling at her.
Right around here, there's right after that, there's another little pause.
Yes.
And then they play it, and I'm like, you already made that musical joke. Why are you repeating jokes? What are you doing? So, very, very strained. Yeah,
Not a favorite.
I have to admit, every time it comes on, though, it brings me a little joy. Because, that's the thing. This one, Biker Like an Icon, Golden Earth Girl, anytime they come on... I'm always like, ha, there we go.
Yeah, brings you back.
Because they're enjoyably bad. Like, this whole album's enjoyably terrible. of course, we gotta finish the album off here.
Final.
Now, we're gonna talk about a couple of the extras after this, too. But here is the, get ready for a theme. Get ready for a message. And here it is. It's Come On, People.
Well, we're going to get it right this time. We're going to, really going to raise it to the sky.
Well, this is Come On, People, and it's continuing the theme earlier espoused in A Piece in the Neighborhood of, once again, if we could all just come together, the world would be a better place. And this is the big production number. This is the big finale, because at the end, it's got an orchestra on it, and it's actually arranged by George Martin, interestingly enough. He asked George Martin to write something orchestral for the end. So it is a big production and a big deal, but eventually it sort of leaves you a little flat, I think.
The perfect thing I could say about this is it's a message song with no message.
Yeah.
It's basically like, come on, people, let's get it right this time.
Yeah.
Like, what are we getting right? What specifically are you preaching to us about this in this song, Paul? Like, yeah, we're going to get it right. You know, now yeah. we're going to do it. Everyone, we're going to do it. What are we doing, Paul? Yes, we're going to do
Let's do it.
Let's get it right.
Yep.
What are we getting right? I don't know.
Yeah, because you're right. I'm looking at the lyrics, and he just keeps saying that he's going to keep getting it right this time. Raise it to the sky, yearning for the way it's going to be. Because believe me, when you see it happening to you, you know it's real.
Oh.
What? I guess it's peace and love again. Here.
I want to know what it is.
I know, but he leaves you hanging. But
that's it.
Again, it's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot so of great. Oh, yeahs. It's, I guess I probably like it more than you, because you would say, as a general rule, you listen to the lyrics more than the music, or do they matter more? Or
I wouldn't say that all the time. There's some other... I mean, we're on the opposite end of that when it comes to... Admiral Halsey.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I like that song for great reasons, and you can't get past the insane lyrics
that's
of it.
True.
So I think it's from track to track. It's more like if you're gonna be presenting a like Sing the Changes works for me.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a comparable kind of song to this.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of vague, but this is vague in a way of like you're not really talking about anything. You're not really. If you're gonna write a song like this, it's like basically the best Beatles songs are you know that have withstood the years that he plays at his concerts that everyone like Hey Jude and that kind of thing. You know, there's a something to the lyrics that relate to your life. Mm-hmm. This relates to nothing. This is just vaguities.
Yeah.
You know? Come on, people, get it right this time.
Yeah.
What does that mean to my life? Nothing.
Yeah. I don't know.
You know?
I don't know what he was going for here. Going for the big message that didn't come. I don't know.
So,
but that's how it ends, except
yeah.
there's a little little bonus tag at the end here, and he alludes to it on the actual album cover, because he's on the track listing. He says, it goes, come on, people, and then it says, and remember to be ... cosmically conscious.
I'd like to play just a little bit of Cosmically Conscious here. Cosmically Conscious for you.
You know, a little snippet from a song that he wrote back in India, back in 1968 when the Beatles went to India, and it's a little dated, I guess, in its sentiments here. Being who says anyone is cosmically conscious anymore?
Well, on the B-sides, or if you were lucky enough to get off the ground the complete works... You would get a full version of Cosmically Conscious, like a full 4-minute
nice
version. It was released as a B-side. Which single is it? You've got both singles there in front of you. It's a B-side of one of those singles, but it's also a hidden track at the end of the... You remember the hidden tracks? Like, why are there hidden tracks all of a sudden for, like, about 10 years in the 90s? Like everything had a hidden tracks, and then
I remember you'd say, like, someone would say, "Oh, I just got the new Wilco album," and then you'd listen to it and be like, "Oh yes, I like the last tune." And then they'd say a name you didn't know, and they're like, "Oh, it's a hidden track." And there, at the end of Summer Teeth, there's a hidden track or something. Yeah, So that was like a really big deal for some reason.
For a little while, and I don't know, it's dumb.
Paul
it's
does like, that too like, on other albums as well. So, yeah, I don't know why that's a so cool, but anyway.
Well, what Her Majesty was kind of
that's
a hidden
track. That's true. Another one.
Maybe the first sort of hidden
little
track.
Little tag on there, yeah.
Yeah.
So that ends the official album of Off the Ground. And then we also have a couple of, they called them maxi CD singles, which had four tracks on them. So I have the Hope of Deliverance and Come On People ones myself. And on the Hope of Deliverance one, you have that song, of course. And then you have three extras. One is called Long Leather Coat.
Okay.
Another one called Kicked Around No More. And then probably our favorite is called Big Boys Bickering. And I'm going to let you talk about that one.
All right. We got to hear a little bit of Big Boys Bickering.
Yes.
Here we go.
Taxes that you pay went to fund a masquerade. Big boys bickering, that's what they're doing all the day. Big boys bickering.
Wow.
Wow, that was that.
We got a little F-bomb.
A lot of F-bombs on that one.
Wait, do we have to bleep this? Do we have
I know.
Paul? Paul? Like, what? Paul? We know now why that one didn't make the album.
Yeah.
Too controversial. But everybody remembers the big boys bickering controversy, right?
It was in the national news. Oh, yeah.
Actually, you know, and I have some footage that I actually have already put on our website, on our Facebook site. Go to Facebook and follow I've Got a Beatles podcast, and you'll see it. And he played this live.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this song kind of fits in with the whatever the theme of the album might be. This and Cosmically Conscious sort of fit in with some of the other tracks on the album, particularly I'm thinking about like Looking for Changes and
the politically active.
Come on, So it seems to me that not only is this album sort of like weak, but that this album sort of like considering some of those songs were pushed to the B sides, that it wasn't like going strong enough for like, hey, I'm gonna really make a political album this time.
Yeah.
It's going to have Big Boys Bickering on there. It's going to have Looking for Changes. And it's going to be songs about I'm mad about these issues. And I want to, let's think about these, let's be conscious, cosmically conscious about these issues. But instead of that, he's like, nah, let's not quite do that.
No.
Except some of that on there, but most of it will be really inane, sort of like Mistress and Maid type song.
Yeah, it's interesting that I wonder what it would be like to have an all McCartney political album. It just wouldn't seem sincere to me for some reason. I don't know why. It seems more sincere coming from John or George than it would from Paul.
Yeah.
I don't know. But on the other hand, he was so prolific and had so many tunes. So also on this Come On People CD, you have three other songs. You have a song called I Can't Imagine, which was also on the iTunes re-release in 2007. And then a Hamish Stewart McCartney composition, Keep Coming Back to Love, and then one called Down to the River.
And I want to say about these, I mean, we played the two most interesting ones. But I want to say about these, there's also a song called, on the Off the Ground Complete Works, there's a second disc, and here's the track that's on there. Long Leather Coat, then Keep Coming Back to Life, Sweet Sweet Memories, Things We Said Today, like a live version of it, Midnight Special, Style Style, which is a 5 minute long kind of like meandering song. I Can't Imagine, Cosmic Conscious, Kicked Around No More, Big Boys Bickering, Down to the River, and Soggy Noodle. Soggy Noodle is a 30-second song that has no purpose. That some of those tunes are actually better songs than what made the album, and I'm like, why aren't... Even Big Boys Bickering...
It's all right, actually. Yeah.
...is kind of okay. Musically, it was... You know what it reminds me the most of is this is the era that band played during the Unplugged thing.
Yes.
And it sounds very Unplugged to me. And I'm like, ooh, maybe that was the way to go with this follow-up album to Flowers in the Dirt. Yeah. Is go with that. If you're making an album because you like that band so much, why not make like a sort of acoustic-y thing? But where you talk about political issues, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, there's a lot of extra stuff you can, if you're really a devoted fan of Off the Ground, you can go dig out these bootlegs. But for the rest of us, what would you, as we wrap up this album here, have to give it a, let's say, best song, worst song, and then a rating from 1 to 10?
All right, so best song. I think probably I'd go with Hope of Deliverance as best song.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I'll say best song for me would be actually Off the Ground. Start with the first song, the title song.
Okay. Okay, and then worst song. I think I'll go for Looking for Changes just because just read the lyrics. It's ridiculous. Why are you writing a song with all those lyrics?
And I'll go with both the Elvis Costello songs on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely for that. So then a rating.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
Yes.
3.
Ooh, ouch. I'll be a little more generous. I'll probably give it a 6.
Wow. Yeah. A 6?
Yep, I'll give it a 6. On the strength of its musicality, not the lyrics. But on the strength of the songs themselves, not necessarily the production.
Yeah,
but.
just then when I was like trying to think of like Golden Earth Girl, and you know, there's some real good musical moments in it.
Yeah, that's the reason. Lyrically, I'd say a 3. Yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah, I'll stick with my 3. I can't like. In good conscience, I can't recommend anyone rush out and get it, you know?
Yeah, this is like if you're a McCartney completist, you'll want this. But if you're just a casual fan, I don't think you'd probably get much out of it.
Absolutely true. And you know, definitely check out any of the videos of the era too, because they're pretty... The Off the Ground one, I think Paul's actually flying in the air over a bunch of, you know, beautiful landscapes and stuff of that nature. So it makes me think, like, we should do a future episode on some of these B-sides, because
Paul has
so many B-sides and stuff. And a lot of the time, it's like, man, I wish it was there to be like, hey, this one's better than that one, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe put Rain Clouds on the album just because it's interesting. You know?
Yeah, I think that's true. That goes along with the whole knock on McCartney for all these years that he didn't have someone telling him what his best stuff was. He did everything himself, so he didn't have that objectivity to look at it. So
all right, we'll play out with a little bit of Soggy Noodle.
Soggy Noodle to finish it up.
The 30-second log Soggy Noodle. We'll finish this episode. Follow me. I'm at Chris D. Bragg on Twitter. You go to our Facebook page and follow us. Of course, I've Got a Beatles podcast. Here's some Soggy Noodle.